WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. My guest Muriel Spark is best known for her novel, The Prime of Miss Jean Brody, which was adapted into a popular play, film, and TV series. In Spark's new memoir, Curriculum Vitae, we learn, among other things, about the real teacher Miss Jean Brody was based on. Spark is the author of 19 novels and has also written for The New Yorker, where excerpts of her memoir first appeared. Stephen Schiff recently profiled her for the magazine and wrote, "Muriel Spark has written some of the best sentences in English. For instance, he looked as if he would murder me, and he did." Muriel Spark grew up in Edinburgh and now lives in Italy. The publication of her memoir has brought her to the States. I spoke with her earlier today and asked her about Miss Christina Kay, the teacher who she had at the age of 11, who inspired the character of Miss Jean Brody. Spark says she fell under her teacher's spell.
She was a marvelous educator. We didn't realize it at the time, but she just kept the whole class of 40 girls riveted the whole day. It rather made theater out of the whole school experience. She was dramatic in her way of presentation. She looked dramatic. She had large dark eyes, and she used to bring all her own personal experience right into the schoolroom and tell us that when we should have been having a history lesson or a arithmetic or something, she'd be telling us of all her experiences during her summer holidays, all the people she met and the wonderful times she had, and the beautiful pictures she saw and the music she'd heard. And describing all this to us, it made us feel that we'd experienced it ourselves. I used to write poetry as a child about her experiences, not my own.
I found that very amusing when you said that in the book.
Yeah.
What kind of poems would you write about her experiences?
I would write about the beauty of the country, the Forum in Italy. I would write about the Switzerland and the snow and the flowers. I would write everything she told us, actually. And sometimes I'd write essays about it.
Your teacher was interested in Mussolini and fascism. How did you reconcile that with everything that you loved about her?
Well, we didn't know anything about it. She just brought these wonderful pictures from the newspapers of Mussolini marching on Rome with all his black shirts, and said what a fine fellow he was, how he'd cleaned up Italy. She didn't think for a minute that it would, the same politics would apply in Britain, because we had a monarchy. She didn't think we needed cleaning up, which in fact we did. And I don't think she knew quite what it implied. For instance, she didn't know quite what a dictatorship meant. She didn't think it through. She was just impressed by this big, bold man, you see. She was quite sexy. Of course, in the book, I rather exaggerate all these qualities.
I want to skip to when you were 19 years old, and you married a man 13 years older than you, who you didn't know very well.
Not very well, no.
And he was going to what was then Southern Rhodesia.
Southern Rhodesia. He went, and I followed later.
Was this your way of having an adventure?
Yes. And I thought he was very marriageable, too. But I had made a really big mistake, and he had been rather remiss in not coming across with his medical history. He was a psychopath.
I'm not surprised he didn't tell you that.
No, but, he knew it and should have revealed some of his medical history.
Well, you started finding out about this little by little when you were in Africa him. What were the early signs that he was crazy?
He was violent.
Violent to you?
Yes.
What would he do?
Oh, just be violent. Knock me around. I had to go to hospital. However, I got out of that very quickly. I just refused to have anything to do with them and took the baby and got out of the way. And he was very lucid at times, but he just had these fits. But I said I wanted a divorce.
I'm trying to imagine what it was like for you. You were in your early 20s.
Yes,
you're in Southern Rhodesia. World War II is breaking out, and you're getting a divorce.
I was very angry and very tough.
Uh-huh.
I really was tough because I knew I'd been badly let in for something that I shouldn't have been. It wasn't my fault.
Right. So you got your divorce.
I got my divorce. Then I was feeling very ill, and then I couldn't bring my son back to England. But for the last part of the war, I came back to England to work.
Why couldn't you bring your son with you?
Oh, because it was too dangerous on the seas.
But you were willing to take that risk yourself?
Oh, yes.
You were so desperate to get out?
Oh, yes. I wanted to do some war work, too.
For the war?
Yes. Africa was a desperate country to be in. It wasn't nice.
What do you mean by desperate?
Well, there was a racial situation, and there was no tension politically, but in actual life, everyday life, there was plenty of tension. It wasn't a very pleasant situation at all.
Well, how did you feel as a young woman leaving your baby son behind while you took this dangerous voyage on the seas to England?
Yes, I didn't like that. A lot of people were leaving. They had to leave their children when they were posted home or anything like that in civil service. They were obliged to leave their children either in Canada, Africa, or in what was one of our colonies at the time, Australia. A lot of children were separated from their parents in wartime. Nobody took the children into the theater of war.
Where did you keep your son?
Oh, he was with some friends and went to a convent school.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, my guest is writer Muriel Spark, and her new book is a memoir about the first part of her life. It's called Curriculum Vitae. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Writer Muriel Spark is my guest. Well, you managed to get to England. You I believe visited your family in Scotland, then went to London because you wanted to experience the war.
Yes.
You wanted to help England? You wanted to help the cause?
Yes. I wanted to be in the war, and I did get into the war.
You got a job with British
yes,
intelligence.
Yes.
Why don't you describe your job for us?
Well, it was broadcasting to the pockets of German troops that were holding out all over the continent. Subversive propaganda. But we were broadcasting as a true and Hitler-loving German station, ostensibly. But of course we used to slip in a lot of subversive remarks and things like that to demoralize the German troops.
What's an example of the type of subversive remark you'd script in?
Oh, all sorts of... For instance, there was the bomb plot in 1944, plot against Hitler, where those generals failed to blow him up. But this was broadcast by us as a deplorable event. But they added that Hitler was saved, miraculously saved, which was true, and that he'd only lost his trousers. You see, this sort of is sort of to humiliate them and to make the soldiers laugh.
And when were you able to bring your son back?
Oh, just as soon as the war ended in 1945, as soon as the war in Japan ended.
What was it like to see him after?
Oh, it was nice. It was lovely, yes. And I took him to my mother and father, who were very, very keen to have him. And he stayed with them always.
So did they bring him up?
I commuted. I had a... They brought him up, yes.
And how did he feel about that when he became old enough to realize that his grandparents were bringing him up more than his mother?
Well, he liked it. He'd rather have had naturally his mother and his father, but he couldn't have that.
You write about two religious conversions in your family. Let's see, your mother was Protestant and your father was Jewish. Your son, when he was...
No, my mother was sort of Protestant, yes.
Okay. And your son, when he was a young man, I believe, or a teenager, converted to Judaism.
Yes.
And you converted to Roman Catholicism when you were how old?
I was about 32, 33, like that.
And why did you convert to Catholicism?
Oh, because I had been reading on Catholic lines for a long, long time. Great many people of my, just the generation before me, and of my generation, people like Alec Guinness, Graham Greene, and long before that, Evelyn Waugh, had become Catholic. It seemed to be the normal thing for a writer to do and for an artist to do, because it gave you a stable base and a kind of point of departure point of return.
Point of departure and return from what?
A departure and return from the Catholic faith. It was a fixed point.
So do you think the conversion helped your writing?
Yes.
By giving you that fixed point?
Yes. I was much more inspired and able to organize my work better. The question of organizing. I'd got my spiritual life organized as far as one ever can, and it showed in my work. You've got to really find yourself in matters of religion. Find what... I felt that when I became a Catholic, that I had been a Catholic all along, really.
How so?
I don't know. I just felt that. I felt that this is what I had always believed anyway.
Was it hard for you to get up the stamina to write your first novel?
Well, I had been ill. Yes, it was. But as I was writing, I realized that I was writing something quite new, quite different from anybody else's, and that gave me courage to carry on.
You said something about being ill?
I had been ill, yes. I'd had a nervous breakdown, and through taking Dexedrine. And it gave me a sense of delusions of words jumping about on the page. Well, I went to a doctor, and as soon as the Dexedrine stopped, I got better. Those delusions went away. But I still felt rather ill. I was undernourished.
What had you been taking the Dexedrine for?
For appetite suppressant, because I didn't have enough to eat. I didn't want to feel hungry.
You didn't have enough to eat because you didn't have any money?
Yes.
Wasn't it expensive to buy the pills, though?
No, it was less.
The pills were cheaper than food.
Yes.
But so you got hooked on the pills. Did you realize what was happening to you?
No, I didn't connect it with the pills. I realized something was happening. Then when I went to an ordinary doctor, that problem was solved, but I was still left rather in a weak condition. And so I went to the country to write this novel, really about my experience.
Now, I know after you started writing, you lived in New York for a while, but after a few years there, you moved to Italy, where you continue to live. Was there something about New York that didn't agree with you?
No, it was. I was in New York 4 years, by which time I was working at the New Yorker offices, and it really was rather wonderful. But I found that the distractions were mounting up. Now, my play, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, the last year I was in New York, had been on the West End of London. And I had kept in New York. now it was coming, moving to Broadway with Zoe Caldwell. And I got out of it because I really found that the pressures on me of being a temporary celebrity of a kind were too much. I wanted to get on with my work, so I went to Italy.
What was too much about those pressures?
Well, just seeing people, people wanting to see me, great deal of pressure.
Mm-hmm. So you've lived in Italy since...
When you write a play. I've lived in Italy since 1968.
Is there any connection between living in Italy and your conversion to Catholicism?
Well, I think so. I used to love the churches in Rome. I settled in Rome first. I loved the churches, and living in a Catholic country meant a great deal to me. I felt at home.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Not at all. Enjoyed it.
Muriel Spark's new memoir is called Curriculum Vitae. This is Fresh Air.